Remind me to send Paul the LBJ ordering pants file.
Okay, I'll remind you.
Thank you.
I live to serve.
I'm Steve Benson.
I'm Paul Schultz.
And this is the Don't Panic Radio Show. Sit back, relax, and ignore the news. Nothing you're about to hear is true.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
Thanks for listening, everybody. I am just super excited to be here for the second week in a row.
It's a winning streak.
Sitting here with my good friend, Paul. We got softcore history today, which I'm calling super soft. This is like Charmin softcore history, because usually I take like 3-4 hours to write these things. Mm. Tonight I did it while I was waiting for Paul to be ready to record.
This is like 3-ply.
This is like that bear that uses a rabbit to wipe his butt on that commercial. If you know the commercial I'm talking about, that's what this one is like. Anyway, it's a good one. It's relevant to what's going on today. It's to this day, the Wikipedia entry on this event is still disputed as to its neutrality. So that tells you.
Well, I'm excited.
It tells you something. I don't know what, but it tells you something. It
tells you something.
If we get time and Paul feels like it, he's going to review Ant-Man versus Wasp Girl or Wasp Man or
you
the
know
Ant versus Wasp Man. I forget. Everybody's fighting each other these days. I can't keep up. So, and it might, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if we get to it. I hope we do, because as good as Black Panther was, I feel like I want to keep watching these things.
Have you seen the Ant-Man yet? The movie by itself?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
I didn't like the Spider-Man. He seemed very cartoonish. Okay. Anyway, I'm very excited to hear about the Ant movie. We're going to hear from Paul about his week, like we do every week. And I had one more thing I was going to talk about, and I forget what it was, so I may not end up talking about it if I don't remember it. So anyway.
Well, there's also my non-podcast podcast project
that's
that I'm
it.
Working on.
That's it. Okay. The unpodcast. All right. So all of that was an act. I knew that I wanted to open with energy this week.
That's exhausting.
I always feel like, you know, our opening is good and it's tight.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the music... Our opening is good and tight. I always feel like the music, though, you know, adds energy to it.
Mm.
And then when we come in, if we're not, I always feel like if we're not like up, you know, it's always like a downer. So I thought,
yeah,
this week I'll throw in a bunch of fake enthusiasm and we'll see how that goes. I can't wait to hear it. Anyway,
yeah,
back into the routine,
in
back into the swing of things. A line is defined as the set of points that include, or the set of points that include at least 2 points. And now, with the second week in a row, Paul and I are drawing a new line. We will record again next week, and then I'm off a week to go ride that epic ride across Iowa.
Maybe I'll see what SFJ's doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could do that. I'm sure he would be happy to sit in for a week.
He might even put a shirt on.
Oh, God forbid. You know what? God bless SFJ, because, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, but all the guys that I see running around without a shirt on have, like, nice pecs and cut abs, you know, they look good without their shirt on. And I'm not saying SFJ doesn't look good with his shirt on. He's just not one of those guys, right? He does it anyway.
You know,
it's like my dad. My dad almost never wore a shirt in the summer.
That's right. Yeah, he never did.
He's like Jerry Schmidt. Like, if Jerry Schmidt didn't have that long hair, I might have thought he was my dad. It's like, or if he weren't wearing shorts.
What is it that like Amy Schumer said about the, you know, the one thing you don't want someone to say, you know, after doing like a sexy layout, what is it? You're very brave or something like that. He's very brave.
Yeah. If you go on stage without a shirt on, you don't want people saying you're brave. Anyway, God bless SFJ. I hope he sits in. I miss him. I'd love to hear his voice and see his bare nipples. That having been said, we're having a party this Friday. It's the kickoff party for the family reunion that we have every year. Therefore, most of my week so far, well, 2 days of it, were about cleaning and getting the house ready.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually ahead of schedule, I think. But usually when I think we're ahead of schedule, I find out from my wife that we're not ahead of schedule. And things get really frantic toward the end. And that's a long way of saying the only stories that I have about my week involve, oh, I know what it was. Driving home with my daughter today after picking her up from one of her camps, her horse camp. Mm-hmm. And we were joking about our family. And what was it she said? It was, she says, I was giving her some advice about something, like high school, mm-hmm. something. And she's like looking at me like I said, don't wait. Don't wait until you feel like you're fitting in. Don't wait until you feel like you got the lay of the land. Just don't wait. As soon as you get there, just don't feel like you have to wait. She's like, wait for what? And I said, well, you know, to start doing stuff, leading stuff, making an impact. Don't sit around waiting, you know, to be like, well, I got to figure out how things work around here and all that stuff. She's like, well, why would I wait? I was like, okay, I get it. A lot of the advice I give you, we should probably both keep in mind, I'm actually giving to myself when I was that age, right?
Right.
So I'm actually talking to eighth grade me mm-hmm. instead of you. I'm like, here's the advice. I'm going to give you this advice, the stuff that I wish somebody had told me. You may or may not need to hear it.
Right. That's exactly what I do. Yeah. One of the main things I tell my kids is like, the one thing I wish people would have told me way back when was, if you don't know what you're doing, pretend you do.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do it enough, one, nobody will mess with you, and two, you'll figure it out. Somebody would have told that to me years ago, I'd have been a much more productive member of society.
Absolutely. And if I knew, I didn't find this out until about 2010, maybe 2009. Mm-hmm. But this whole thing, there is an actual thing called the fraud complex.
Mm-hmm.
And it is where people believe that they're going to be exposed as a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out about 80% of people have that. So I thought it was just me until around 2009, 2010. I'm in my 40s.
Yeah.
And I find out that everybody thinks they're going to be exposed as a fraud.
Right.
And we're all running around going, I don't really know what I'm doing. Someday somebody's going to find out. But we're all doing that. And I wish somebody had explained that to me when I was a kid. The issue I have with my kids is, or at least my older daughter at this point, I think she doesn't have it. So I'm giving her all this advice that applies to somebody who is a little bit unsure of themselves, but she's not unsure of herself. So a lot of my advice probably seems like, why are you telling me this? So anyway, I was telling her this and she goes, you know, Nana, which is what she calls one of her grandmothers, mm-hmm. she's kind of like the opposite of that. I was like, what do you mean? She goes, she doesn't say what she wishes somebody had told her. She just says what she did and how she perceives it, how it went down, that she thinks it was like... I was like, give me an example. She's like, well, like she'll say, every Sunday, your aunt and I spent the whole day vacuuming the whole house. And like every Sunday. That's how we kept the house clean. And she's giving me that as advice. And I just kind of look at her and go, yeah, that's not how our family works. I said, did you explain to her? And it's timely because this just happened, I think, Monday. I said, did you explain to her that might be how they did things? But the way we do things is we wait until about 2 weeks after we should have done it.
Yeah.
And then the whole family, starting way too late with not enough time, starts like doing things and start yelling at each other and getting on each other's nerves. And we all get really grumpy and we go to bed too late, mad at each other. And then a few days later, we laugh about the situation. Did you explain that to her? She's like, no, I didn't really explain that to her. Yeah. So me sitting here today on a Wednesday when we got the party on Friday, and this will be interesting to listen to after this all, you know, in the temporal future, because I'm sitting here like, oh, man, we're getting pretty close. I got to straighten this area up, my studio area, because people party down here too. But everything else is in pretty good shape, you know. Smash cut to Friday, 2 hours before the party when I get home from work. And my wife is in a rampage because, like, we still have 8 hours worth of work to do to get ready. I guess I should have
done it better. No pressure, no diamond.
Is that a Bob Marley song?
No pressure, no diamond. Wait, why?
Hey, man.
No diamond, man.
No white women. So that's kind of how my week's going to go. How was your week?
And it was at that moment that Steve realized. Not like that. Oh, man. You know how, you know, speaking of your daughter's grandma, I don't know how it is with your folks, but with, like, my parents, because they're old people, even, like, the ones that, like, know better, at some point in their life they just start eating nothing but like frozen dinners and crap. I mean, my dad grows he has a garden, all right, a big garden, and yet they still eat frozen crap, you know, with the tomato.
It's easy.
You know, with the tomato. Well, my mom finally realized, yeah, right? She went shopping with me one day.
Fresh vegetable,
right? My mom went shopping with one day and she just was infuriated with how long it took me to shop. And I'm just like, well, I'm reading the labels. I'm finding, you know, I'm trying. And so she went home and she told my dad, she's like, I can't help but notice that the better Paul and his family eats, the worse we eat. So I told her, I said, well, I can show you how to do it again, you know. It's like, you know, it's in you. You've did it for years. So we've been doing, we do a lot of shopping together, and I've been teaching her how to outside shop and stuff like that. But yesterday, we were at the Kroger's, but not your Kroger's, but not the Kroger's, but we were at our the Kroger's. And, you know, my mom's, I just let her go off in her own world, and I'm bopping up and down the aisles, and I'm getting my stuff. And I look up, and there's this little old lady standing in front of me. Just like, she's like looking around for whatever. And I look at her and I wave at her because I recognize her. But I hadn't seen her in like 20 years. I wave at her and she's like, she does that like deer in the headlights thing for a second. And I'm like, I just went, it's Paul. And she's like, oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Well, this woman... She's my dad's best friend's wife, okay? We've been friends, his cookouts, even family reunions, everything. They've been at all this stuff. They've been to all the weddings and everything. And we'd run into them. Anytime we would be shopping in Michigan City, we'd run into them. We saw them all the time. And then it's been about 20 years since I've seen her. I've seen her husband numerous times at my dad's shop. Because he goes in there and they tell dirty jokes and stuff when my mom's not around. But we got to talking, and she's like, I didn't even recognize you. I said, well, I said, you probably didn't recognize me because, you know, I shaved my head. And she goes, no, you just got better looking as you got older. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the funny part was it got weird because before she'd said that, when she realized who it was, I leaned in and gave her a hug, you know, and she like kisses me on the cheek, and I'm like, oh, well, that just got weird. So she was asking, you know, how are the kids? Because she knew about my kids, and I was explaining to her, you know, the ages, and this one's going into this school, that one's coming out of this, you know, the thing you do.
Yeah.
And then after a while, I'm like, well, you know, you reach that awkward, weird silence thing. And she doesn't want to, like, just walk off. And I'm like, well, you know, mom's on her little, she's buzzing around in her little buggy around here. So, you know, if you see her, say hi. I said, oh, okay, okay. So she wanders off, and I go off shopping. And I get my work done, you know, and I'm coming around, and my mom and I see my mom and her in this aisle, and I kind of wave, you know, to let them know, hey, I see you, but I'm still busy shopping. And they wave and keep talking. And eventually, my mom and I rendezvous, and we check out. We're loading groceries in the cart. And I said, yeah, it was funny because, you know, I said, I saw her, and I looked at her, and she didn't even notice that I waved. And my mom goes, the first thing she said was, boy, he got good looking when he got older. So I'm like, okay, apparently it's a thing. Well, we loaded up the groceries, you know, and that was pretty much it. But I'm walking around going, I don't feel too bad. Because the thing about it is everybody, okay, she's an old lady now. But when she was younger, woo.
Hey, man.
She was like.
There is a whole section on Pornhub for gifts.
I'm sure there is. So. I wouldn't know anything about that. But no, when she was younger, okay. And it's the only reason why I recognize her, because her, you know, like her face really didn't change. She just got a lot older. But when she was younger, she was like, if you picture like Liz Taylor in like Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. I mean, she was just, she was a knockout.
Okay, give me a minute. Hold on. Okay, got it. Go on.
She was a regular Maggie the Cat. But my mom told me a long time ago, she's like, you know, when they got married, I didn't give them even a hope, because her husband is one of these corn-fed, gigantic, redneck motherfuckers. I mean, he is a farmer from the day he hit the ground. He's like that dude. You remember that folk tale about the kid that was given the calf, and every day he picked the calf up, and every day the calf got bigger, and so did he.
Yeah.
That's him. He's that guy.
Trying to picture your mom saying redneck motherfucker, but okay.
Like Samuel Jackson.
Yeah. Oh, Paul. He was a big old redneck motherfucker.
He was. Now, he'd some vegetable pizza. He'd my fucking vegetable pizza. But, see, they ended up, they had one kid together, and it was a daughter, and mercifully, she took after her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always thought, man, I pity the dude. Her first boyfriend, I pity him.
She's got to be about your age, right?
No, she's significantly younger than I am, but she's married and, like, how you know, got her life and everything. I assume her first three or four suitors are buried on his farm somewhere.
Happily married?
As far as I know. But... I got home and I'm still laughing about it. You know, to me, it was just funny. And then I sat there and I thought, oh, shit. So I'm thinking, now I'm going to get like this pounding at my door. I'm going to go down there and there's going to be this fucking octogenarian Jack LaLanne motherfucker sitting on the side of the door wanting to beat my ass because she went home and said, boy, Paul got good looking when he got older.
Paul and I, remember Paul? Paulie? We had a nice little time at the grocery store.
And knowing him, he would take it completely the wrong way.
I swear, man. It's probably a good thing you got better looking when you got older instead of back in the day, because she probably would have made a move at one of them family reunions.
And they never would have saw me again.
Yeah. I'd have been like, whatever happened to the boss? Well, then it would have been a gang war, because, you know, they take out our boss, we're going to take out their boss.
I couldn't believe it. I laughed so hard. It was like, great, I'm going to get my ass beat by Mandelbaum. He's just going to come busting through my door.
Jacqueline Lane, look at motherfucker. There's something gratifying. I don't care. Okay. So we all grew up with our grandmas telling us how, well, not my grandmas, but my mom and other people's grandmas telling us like, oh, what a handsome man, you know? And like old ladies telling you you're good looking is like, you know, it's just something old ladies say, right?
Yeah. They're like honor bound to say it.
Right.
It's in their charter.
I think at our age, I think it doesn't really matter unless she's in her 90s. It doesn't matter how old she is. To have somebody say something like that I think I would imagine that must be very a boost to your confidence, let's say. Am I right about that?
Because if I need anything, it's a boost to my confidence. I think my confidence is like overstated. I think my reach has exceeded my grasp or something on my confidence level.
So you think you're punching above your weight class?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's good, right? Isn't that what everybody would like to do?
Well, as I said before, pretend you know what you're doing.
Yeah. So if you were talking to a younger, say an SFJ, well, SFJ's married, but let's say a single version of SFJ, and they're looking for a relationship, right? But they're kind of down on themselves, like maybe they're, you know, they don't feel like they're the best looking guy. They don't feel like they, you know, are the best shape, you know, or whatever. What advice would you have for those guys?
Feign indifference.
Explain.
Okay, fellas. If you pretend you don't give a fuck, it's like catnip for women.
So what if there's a woman
who... I know I'm going to get so much hate comments about this.
It's all right, you know. This is a dialogue. We're not talking at you, we're talking with you. I'm talking to the ladies. And I'll play devil's advocate here. So, and I'm not saying women are devils. I did not say that. But I'm going to be their advocate. So let's say there's a woman who is actually interested in... All right, I got two questions. So one, let's say there's a woman who is actually interested in you, okay? And you feign this indifference. And then maybe, as is very often the case, maybe she's a little bit shy and like lacks confidence. And she sees that as you're not interested. So she doesn't want to take a risk and push it any further because, you know, you've shown that you're somewhat indifferent. So it's too big of a risk. She doesn't want the rejection. All right. So there's a girl who is interested in you. Maybe she would have been funny or good looking. One of the two, usually not both. But, you know, but you miss out because you faked this indifference thing. So are you okay with that risk? Or
have you ever known a cat to turn down catnip?
So now you're catnip.
The indifference is the catnip. The indifference triggers the challenge response. I'm like the ladies, man. The indifference triggers... The indifference triggers the challenge response, and your work's done.
You sound like
you don't even got to do any.
What's her name?
You don't got to do any heavy lifting.
What was the woman that every time they talked about sex on TV, she came on like her pager went off?
Oh, Dr. Ruth.
Dr. Ruth Weisenheimer or whatever.
Yeah, Weisenheimer.
Westheimer. You like Dr. Ruth Westheimer? No, I guess my point. I guess what I'm hearing from you is the type of woman that you want to attract. Is attracted to indifference.
No, they're all attracted
to indifference. Like all the women, every woman.
Yes, all women are attracted to indifference.
Okay.
It drives them crazy.
Okay, that may be true, and I'm not saying it is, but it may be. And let's assume for a second that it is. Just because you're driving them crazy doesn't mean that they're going to push through that. They may still go, well, I guess he's out of my league because I'm, you know... I'm attracted to him, and I'm even more attracted to him now that I know that he doesn't like me, but I'm not going to take that risk. I don't want to be rejected.
Well, they've done studies, and 60% of the time, it works 100% of the
time. Why didn't you say this at the beginning, that they've done studies? I didn't realize that they had done studies.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, I have another question for you.
Okay.
Second question, and I'm continuing to be devil's advocate. Girl, you got the devil in you?
No. Craps.
So this is kind of a question, but it's going to sound like a statement. So just put a question mark at the end of it. In fact, I'll probably raise my voice
just,
at the end.
Yeah, just raise your voice a little bit.
So you are starting a potential relationship with a lie?
No, it's not a lie.
So the basis of your relationship should be honesty and truth authenticity and integrity, I'm assuming, maybe not. But if it is, how are you going to lay down that foundation if your first step is to fake indifference? And then once you get her, you go, oh, I wasn't really indifferent. I was just doing that because that's catnip to you bitches. Wait, hold on. Hold on. Because that's catnip to you bitches.
See, that's the thing. It's not a lie. Is a fake worm on a hook a lie to the fish?
Oh, yeah. That's a complete lie. That's telling that fish this is dinner for you. When in reality, it's the end.
But is it a lie to you, the fisherman?
It's probably not a lie. I'll give you that. And funny thing is, I heard a podcast where they were talking about this recently. I don't know if you heard the same one. Maybe that's why you brought that up. It's a deception. Like in jujitsu, they were talking about jujitsu. Mm-hmm. In jujitsu, like you will use deception. And the guys are going, but is that dishonest? Is that a lie? And he's like, well, no, it's not a lie. I mean, it's deception. It's tactical deception to get your enemy to do something so that you can take advantage of it. So, yeah, I guess.
Well,
if you see the fish as your enemy, and you see the worm as deception to get your enemy to present a vulnerable side so that you can hook it and take advantage of it and haul it in, then, yeah, I guess that you're right. Yeah, that's okay.
But,
I get it.
But see, you can't view the ladies as the enemy because you got to love the ladies.
Well, I don't. I do love the ladies. Lord knows the ladies love me.
Well, here's the thing. All right. Consider this.
All right.
When you're single, all right, and you want to go out and meet people or whatever, you know, you want to try to hook up or whatever, you know, meet somebody, whatever. You're going on a date, blind date in this particular situation works great. You put on your best outfit. You know, in my case, you know, I shave my head really nice and, you know, get it all nice and polished, you know. I get just the right amount of white in my beard, you know, because you want to look older, but you also don't want to look like an old man. So a whole lot of prep in the right colognes to react with the right, the right deodorants and everything. You know, you're putting 100%, you're making you the best possibly you can possibly be. Now, she's doing the exact same thing. All right. Now, that 100% on any given day, you're really about 45% of that. So, therefore, you're a lie walking out of the door. You're who you want to be walking out of the door. So, it's not so much a lie to say to feign indifference. It's not so much a lie to put the rubber worm on the fish hook. It's the you're putting out there who you want to be. Not so much who you You know, it's not a lie. It's who you want to be.
I got nothing. You got me with that. Because, to your point, you know, we all become someone who we're not on an everyday basis, depending on the situation. So, you know, you wanna find a mate, either a soulmate or a I got to come up with a good phrase. Either a soulmate or a tonight mate. like the girls got Mr. Right or Mr. Right Now. We got to have We got to have our version of that. Anyway, yeah, you dress up, you shave, you clean up, you put on underwear, maybe. All things that you don't normally do. So I love it. Mm-hmm. You're like 60% a lie walking out the door. I like that. Mm-hmm. That's a good quote.
I guarantee that if my dad had showed up on his first date with my mom in his fucking underwear, you know, and no pants on and suspenders, they would not have been married for like 50 even years.
Okay, I got it.
Just saying.
I got it. Whole process, it's a process, folks. You're witnessing the creative process in the series of books. Okay, the first one, of course, is going to be called Don't Panic, How to Get By in a World Gone Mad. And maybe the subtitle should be Everything Gonna Be All Right. That's book one. But book two, if it follows the patterns of other self-help series, it's going to be Don't Panic About Getting Laid or Don't Panic About Relationships. And it's going to be written by you mostly. But one of the key aspects is going to be about this whole, there'll be a whole chapter on your 60% of lie walking out the door, right? And the idea is going to be, look, man, yeah, if Paul's dad had shown up in suspenders, like talking about cutting wood on their first date, Paul wouldn't even exist today, right?
That's right.
If you want to attract a mate, you have to make yourself attractive. And I'll tell you what's not attractive. And this is where the editing process comes in. And we have a lot of conversations. Some will get heated about how we present certain ideas. I think the way we're going to present the feign indifference idea, or at least where I'm going to be coming from, is don't be so goddamn eager. Like, so
that, yes,
okay. Instead of saying feign indifference,
a rose by any other name is just as sweet. And you said exactly what I said.
Don't go out there acting like you ain't been laid in 12 years. I don't care if you ain't been laid in 12 years. Act like you just got laid just before you came out tonight. And you're going to get laid 2-3 more times tonight, whether she wants to or not. Or you'd be like, so
I'm going to fuck somebody.
That sounded like Bill Cosby.
Either we
fucking later or I'm fucking.
That's I got two things to add to that. One is all of our books are just gonna be Mad Libs and you just fill in the different nouns.
I tell you what though, this is how we do. Right here, you and me.
This is how we do.
And what we're going to do right now is we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will have, if he thinks of more things over the break, to tell you young lads about attracting the opposite sex or the same sex. If you're into that, that's cool too.
You know, I don't care.
We'll do that. But either way, you know, and we'll get into talking about some movies we saw recently. And Extra Soft 2-Ply. Softcore history. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Oh, man. I need a drink.
Mr. Hager?
Yes, it's Joe Hager.
Joe, is your father the one that makes clothes?
Yes, sir. We're all together.
Y'all made me some real lightweight slacks. Now I need about 6 pairs for summer wear. I want them 1/2 inch larger in the waist than they were before. Leave me at least 2.5-3 inches in the back where I can let them out or take them up. Make the pockets at least 1 inch longer. My money and my knife and everything fall out. Another thing, the crotch down where your nuts hang is always a little too tight. So when you make them up, give me an inch that I can let out.
it's that whole desperation doesn't sell thing. I was saying that to somebody recently.
It absolutely does not.
And so there was this one guy in college that everybody said, yeah, his whole shtick is just like at every party, like he always hooks up with somebody, right? He's a good looking guy. I mean, not, you know, not Brad Pitt, but not bad looking, you know, kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he always hooked up. People are like, what's his secret? And somebody said, well, all he does is he finds some place at the party to sit down, cross his arms, and just kind of have this, I'd rather be somewhere else look on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And invariably somebody would come, some girl would come up to him and be like, what's wrong? What are you doing? He'd just be like, oh, I don't know. I'm just here, you know, whatever. You having a good time? Well, not really. It's whatever. It's fine, you know. And just this whole indifference attitude, right? As opposed to me, who, you know, my approach was to walk up to every girl in the place. You want to dance? You want to dance? You want to talk? We want to get together? You want to go to my room? What do you want to do? What do you want to do? I was like that little dog that danced around that big dog. Hey, George, what do you want to do next? George, what do you want to do? Where are you, George?
That wasn't Rob by chance, was it?
No. It was one of his friends from high school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think Rob is similar. The reason Rob and I are friends, we're friends and stayed friends all these years is beneath the veneer of personality that I really don't like mm-hmm. is basically the same blank canvas of a person. I don't know if I don't think I'm like this anymore, but certainly in college, I was like a dry erase board. I took everything from high school and just erased it
mm-hmm.
and just tried to refill it, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So let's take Rob, I think has even before college probably done this,
mm-hmm.
but it was always trying to model what other people were doing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So he didn't have any personality of his own. Mm-hmm. He was just always trying to find a personality by sort of imitating what other people were doing.
Right.
And so the only time he and I would connect is like late at night when we're just sitting around talking
mm-hmm.
and he was either too tired or too drunk mm-hmm. to keep up the veneer and we would have real conversations, you know?
Yeah.
And so he would do that at parties,
mm-hmm.
but I'm convinced it's because he saw his friend Dave do it and it worked for Dave. So he's like, oh, I'll try that, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't always work.
Yeah, so that's good. I stand by my position, which is don't fake anything
mm-mm.
except the idea that you want to put your best self forward. And if you want to attract the opposite sex or the same sex, you know what's really homophobic is to say it exactly like that.
Well, no, it gets even more. The only way that could be even more homophobic is if you throw in like, I don't even care if you want to fuck a goat, you know.
Or the same sex, or
same
something
species.
That's not even a sex, or even human, whatever. These days, anything goes, well, you know, in the hashtag Me Too era, anything goes, I guess.
See, I try to break things down to the most base level. Now, every guy who is married or in a serious relationship or a committed relationship or a serious committed married relationship will go
or a relationship with a goat
or a relationship with a goat. They'll go like, no, but I will say this, and they'll kind of want to agree with what I'm saying. But the only reason why I'm basic just down to the raw nerve about it is because I don't give a shit. I don't really have the serious relationship to maintain. So if your significant other heard you talking like that, you wouldn't have sex for a week. But we have to civilize ourselves and go, oh no, honey, no, he's the no, I, you know. But what I'm doing is I break it down to a base, like just a primal level, and then you can take that and mold it however you want. I'm just putting it down on a more primitive level.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And the issue, and maybe it's not an issue. Maybe it's what you're aiming for is feigning indifference is how you get laid.
Well, yeah, but sometimes getting laid ends up turning into a relationship.
Yeah, but that wasn't the goal.
It's happened to me. It wasn't the... accidentally a couple of times.
Yeah, that wasn't the goal, though. I mean, it's, and you know, the words you pick actually make a difference in how your actions end up manifesting. Because if you're going out there, if you're going to go, okay, if you're going to go, I'm going to do what Dave does, and I'm just going to look like I don't give a shit, mm-hmm. right? You're going to end up looking like a guy who's trying to look like he doesn't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it might get you laid, right? But maybe Dave really doesn't give a shit, you know? And he's not doing it to get laid. It's just that he doesn't give a shit, right? And if you could get yourself to a level of you really don't give a shit, and I mean that in a positive way. I mean it. Mm-hmm. Here it is. Mm-hmm. I guess here's what set me off is the word feigning. It's like, my advice as a guy who's been married for 30 years or 25 or so and hasn't been on the dating scene in forever and wasn't very successful at it even when he was. Now, with all those selling points, why wouldn't you listen to my advice, right? But I guess what I would say is get yourself to the point where you really are indifferent. Like, I know I'm going to have a relationship. I don't know if it's going to be with you or not. It might be. It might not be, right? I heard this. It's interesting because I heard this about money today on another podcast. Mm. Someday I'm going to have to list all the podcasts I listen to because I've been listening to a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But this person who was talking about money said they finally started making money when they sort of had this realization that it was like, when you walk into a sales meeting, let's say it's a sales thing, or you're going to make a deal that's going to make you some money or whatever, or job interview, mm-hmm. it could be anything, right? If your attitude is, okay, I've done all the seminars, I've read all the books, and I'm going to go into this interview and I'm going to nail it and I'm going to make money from this person. I mean, you might, but it's not going to increase your chances by having that attitude.
Mm-hmm.
What will help you is the attitude of, well, I already know that I'm going to make money or I'm going to get a job or, you know, I'm going to be happy in the job that I get or whatever.
Mm.
It may be this person. I don't know. It may not be this person. Mm-hmm. It's going to be somebody, though. That is the indifference I think you're talking about. It's mm-hmm. like, I'm going to hook up with somebody tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Who's it going to be? It may be you. It's okay with me if it's not, because it's going to be, if it's not you, it's going to be somebody else.
Who's with
that
me?
Is, I think, the catnip you're talking about.
That's part of the catnip, yeah. It works on all the levels, though, not just trying to get laid. But it really does help in that, if that's what you want. But the thing you got to remember, too, is, like, if you go out to, like, just get laid, and, you know, your indifference works, and, you know, you get her back to your place, or I recommend her place, because then you don't got a clean house. But
I knew that was going to be it.
if you get her back
either
to her
before
place,
or after.
If you get her back to her place and her bra and panties match, it wasn't your idea to have sex that night.
That'll be in the book.
What a time.
How about a little softcore history?
Oh, yeah.
Hugh White was assigned to King Street in Boston. The residents were on edge and were not too keen on having White and his fellow peacekeepers showing force in their neighborhood. Hugh knew that some of his fellow uniforms had been harassing kids in the neighborhood. Some of the incidents had come to violence. Few people had even been killed. The citizens claimed it was the brutality of the authorities at the order of the ruling elite. The uniformed officers claimed it was self-defense and the need to maintain law and order. He wasn't much for the politics or the back and forth claims of the two sides. All he knew is he wanted to make it back home in one piece. And he knew he had a job to do. A job that was about to get a lot harder. The night was getting darker and people were starting to mill about in the streets. Hugh's eyes narrowed and his neck hairs twitched as he saw a local official leaving his office building. A guy from the neighborhood named Ed Garrick, a guy that Hugh had seen around before, started harassing the official about some alleged unpaid bill the guy had at Ed's local shop. It was starting to get a little heated, so Hugh decided he ought to try to get control of the situation. He yelled at Garrick to leave the official alone. So Garrick turned on Hugh, called him names, dared him to do something. Hugh kept his composure. It seemed to make Garrick even madder. He came closer and started actually poking his finger into Hugh's chest. Hugh decided this was enough. He clocked the guy with his gun. Things started to get even more heated between the two after that, as you would imagine. Garrick was screaming in pain, getting even more angry, yelling at the other people milling in the street to join him and to see what this guy had done. So a crowd started to gather around Hugh and Ed. Hugh was on his own, though. He was struggling to maintain control of the situation. One guy in the group of people that were gathering around, the de facto leader of the group, half black, half white guy, who was recently released, joined in the taunting. The crowd was yelling at Hugh to fire his weapon, undoubtedly trying to provoke him into some violence so that they would have justification to converge on Hugh. His superiors noticed what was going on, and they sent in backup. Eventually, a supervisor and 8 more uniforms showed up, but the crowd had its own reinforcements as men poured in from the surrounding neighborhoods, throwing rocks and sticks and threatening worse. All the while, they're taunting and daring the officers to fire their weapons. Maybe they got scared and accidentally fired their weapons, or maybe they heard the crowd say fire and they thought it was their supervisor ordering them to fire. Or maybe they just had enough and they were done putting up with the humiliation and the taunting. Whatever the cause, when things settled down, 3 people from the neighborhood were dead and many more were injured by gunshot wounds. 2 more would later die of their wounds. One of them was the mixed race fella I talked about earlier. Now, most of the names from that night are not very often remembered. People don't really talk about Hugh White or Ed Garrick all that much. But there are 2 unlikely heroes that have schools, streets named after them. One of them was the lawyer who actually successfully defended the guys who had been accused of murder after pulling the trigger. The other was a former slave who was one of the victims. Now, you've heard of the former slave killed by the British soldiers and what we Americans know as the Boston Massacre. His name was Crispus Attucks. You may not know who the lawyer was who took on the British soldiers' case against the advice of his friends and family, but he put his own life and his own honor on the line to prove that we're a nation of laws and a nation of equal justice. In fact, he later became president of the United States. His name was John Adams. That's my extremely softcore history.
A man without laws, what do we got?
Well, again, all right, with all due respect to the heroes who are our teachers, okay, who have to go to Walmart, the Walmarts, and buy supplies, right? This isn't about the teachers. This is about the curriculum we've given them to teach. So I'm more on the administration than I am on the teachers. And nobody will come to the administration's defense. Nobody will call the administration the heroes.
Fuck but, no. They will. They'll call themselves heroes.
They will. You have no idea what it takes to push paper in the back room.
You have no idea what it's like to not want this job and then fall into it.
Yeah.
And do the bare minimum to make it through the day.
You have no idea what it's like to dream of some other job and then having this one because it has good benefits.
Or claw your way to middle management.
Right. But, you know, in school, of course, we were taught Boston Massacre was when the British killed a bunch of citizens. Like, oh, that's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
The reality, it turns out, is much more nuanced, let's say. And it's one of those things, and I know we have listeners who are going to say, well, you know, the teachers gave you some basic facts, and they expected you would get interested, and you'd learn everything else later. Well, it would have been nice if they would have said the Boston Massacre was an incident, right, in which some soldiers were put in a situation that was pretty much untenable. And the problem was there was a parliament across the ocean, like 2 weeks' journey away. Communication took 3-4 weeks. Passing laws that applied to this distant place that the citizens didn't like. And to enforce the laws, they put these soldiers who weren't from there, who really didn't understand the politics, who really didn't give a shit. They just wanted to get home to their family and not get killed, right?
Yeah. Well, here's the problem with defending the teachers on that. And not all teachers, of course. Some of them are heroes. Hashtag support the teachers. You learn about the Boston Massacre in the third fucking grade. But by, like, 11th grade, whatever, American history, whatever you take, you know, you should fucking learn more than that. You learn the same shit every single year. You should just go, the teacher, now I realize administration probably plays into it. But the teacher should be like, shh, okay, here, you know, here's what really happened. Come on.
Well,
and then just go, all right, well, we did that. We talked about that. Let's move on, you know?
Yeah, not to turn this into like a teacher, American educational system debate. But I feel like the teachers, first of all, like we said a couple weeks ago, and again, not all teachers. I hate that we have to say not all teachers. Obviously not all teachers.
Yes. We get it.
A lot of them.
It's true. Some of my best friends are teachers.
Right. A lot of them are in this. It's a job, right? My job is a job. It's not like when I was a kid, I was like, oh, I want to sit in a cubicle all day and be worried about what the boss is going to say, right? So we all have jobs that are just jobs. Most teachers are in a job that's just a job, and they just want to make sure that they want to make a difference. We all want to make a difference, right? But we also want to keep our jobs so we can keep paying our damn bills. And part of what a teacher has to do to keep their job and pay their damn bills is make sure these kids pass the tests that they give them.
We're like the passive racist for teachers. Yeah. Some of my best friends are teachers.
Some of my best friends are teachers. And the test doesn't ask about the nuances of the Boston Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
It just says what date, what location, what whatever. So the service I'm trying to provide with Softcore History, if nothing else, is to get people to go to Wikipedia and check it out, right? And go, oh, maybe I didn't know that about Boston Massacre.
Oh, so that's what you're saying earlier about the Wikipedia then, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was part. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was, you know, and the Wikipedia article on the Boston Massacre at the top says the neutrality of this article has been questioned.
Mm-hmm.
So the point being, and I feel like if people, and here's what I think our school system needs to do. It needs to produce good citizens.
Mm-hmm. Not good ants.
Let me correct that. Citizen sounds too much like a subject of the government. What I'm saying is,
those are subjects. Society. Citizens are citizens. Subjects are subjects.
Right, but there's connotation, denotation, right? But my point is, good members of society, however you want to define that, right? A good member of society could look at a news event of the day and go, hey, some people shut down a highway in Chicago. Is that good or bad? It's like, well, it's probably not cut and dry good, cut and dry bad. There's probably nuances there, right? And when Fox News or MSNBC puts out a narrative that says, oh, it's definitely good or it's definitely bad, you ought to be able to be equipped to say, well, I know it's not definitely good or definitely bad, but let me see what's going on here, right? And you ought to have the equipment to be able to do that, to be a good member of society. Mm-hmm. The problem is the reason Fox News and MSNBC are able to do what they do is because people aren't taught to be good members. Because we've been taught these black and white narratives that say Boston Massacre was about British soldiers killing people from Massachusetts.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
And we haven't been taught that it was more complicated than that. That in the end, yes, it was a terrible thing. And those five people that died, including Crispus Attucks, horrible, horrible thing, mm-hmm. right? But was it evil British people killing snow white, lily white, pure, innocent colonial Americans? No, it was not.
Right.
Right? So when you look at an incident like shutting down the Dan Ryan or even the Selma to Montgomery march that Dr. King did mm-hmm. or Black Lives Matter, Occupy Wall Street, the Bundys occupying an abandoned wildlife refuge asking for Slim Jims so they could survive. Any of those situations, if we were taught in school that how this all works. And so let me get down off my rant soapbox for a second and get back specifically to the Boston Massacre. Mm-hmm. And this is why I would encourage people to go look at it with the following mindset or the following questions in your mind. Was it really evil British killing innocent Massachusetts people? I submit to you that it was not. However, it was, there were people who tried to make it that, mm-hmm. right? To further their cause. Like Paul Revere was one of them. Mm-hmm. He took and like copied a drawing that somebody had did and like enhanced it and stuff. The most famous drawing, if you look for Boston Massacre drawing on Google, you'll see this drawing and it just shows a line of British soldiers shooting a crowd of people.
We've all seen it, yes.
Some of them have Crispus Attucks in the forefront.
Yeah, it's kind of like that weird, probably. Like lean back kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Yeah. So that was produced, sent to London mm-hmm. to influence. The whole goal was to get the standing armies out of the colonies and to get Parliament to have less influence on the colonies. Mm-hmm. This is 1770. Independence wasn't a really huge movement at that point. It was just like, let us live our lives.
Yeah.
You know, Parliament over there in London. 3 weeks away
on a good trip.
If you survived the trip. And so somebody looked at this incident and said, here's our chance, right? Mm-hmm. So these guys in the crowd going, fire, fire, you know, shoot us, are probably thinking it would be awesome if they did shoot. Like people shutting down the Dan Ryan are like, how awesome would it be if somebody ran over an innocent little black kid who was out there just protesting to try to have a safer neighborhood, mm-hmm. right? Not that anybody wants a little black kid to die, least of all me. But the point being, looking at how in 1770 they were using these incidents as ways of trying to rile people up for their cause, mm-hmm. could inform, like if they had taught us that in school, instead of just this cut and dry British evil, mm-hmm. Americans good. We might have been able to look at today's situations and go, I wonder if this is like that situation we learned about in school, you know?
So if
where there's not good versus evil, there's just, wow, here's one side trying to advance their cause. Here's another side trying to advance their cause. Let me think about where I fall on all this. But as, you know, a conspiracy theorist might say, maybe that's by design. Maybe if you're one of the elite, maybe you don't want millions of people who understand how all this works, right?
I wouldn't so much call them conspiracy. Oh, yes, the majority of them are conspiracy theorists, but there is something to that idea.
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you?
Yes, and I also don't believe in a global conspiracy. I believe in many, many small conspiracies, but... The thing about, you know, well, if we were taught this, then we would think this. You know, for me, I just had this conversation with my daughter earlier today about reason and excuse. The reason we think this way, and I mean we in the figurative sense, the reason we think this way is because we're taught this way.
Yeah.
But that does not excuse thinking that way. You're an adult. Yeah. You've been through things. You've been through life. You went through the education system. You got out. You saw how the real world was, and you continue to subscribe to the limited view. The reason is school system, but it doesn't excuse your wanting to stick with that limited view.
Yeah, there are, and again, it's probably not a theory. It's probably been proven, especially recently.
Kind of like Trump, the theory of gravity.
Yeah, right. There is a strong incentive for those in power, you know, politicians, news organizations, whoever. Mm-hmm. There is a strong incentive to continue the us versus them narrative.
That's right? Always going to be there. They're always going to do that.
Yes. It's always going to be there. The only weapon we have against it, it's not the only. Yeah. One of the most peaceful, least violent weapons we have against it is education.
Yes.
But not like reading, writing, arithmetic, memorizing dates education.
It just makes you a good worker bee.
But the nuanced, here's how to look at things, here's how to think about situations, mm-hmm. and come to your own conclusions type of education.
Right.
You know what, listeners? Tell us what you think of today's episode, because I like the idea of a relationship advice segment. Whether it's how to survive marriage, or how to get laid, or how to attract a long-term mate. You know what? Paul and I are not experts. Well, speak for myself.
Don't tell me how to do my job.
I don't feel like we're experts. Like we're not like Dr. Ruth Ginsburg or whoever.
Ruth Ginsburg. As I've said, if you fake it long enough,
However, we do have, between the two of us, almost 100 years of experience.
Yeah, just about.
So let us know what you think. Relationship advice. Softcore history. Let us know if you like that particular one. Because as I may have said, I don't know if I said this before we started recording or after, but I wrote that one pretty quick. I didn't put the 3 or 4 hours I normally put into them. I wrote it up in about, 25 minutes?
I don't know so much that, you didn't top your last one, but you came fucking close to being parallel with it. Because of everything that followed into it, you know, you paralleled your last one.
And, you know, just give us some feedback. Always, as always, hashtag PIOP, PIOP, PIOTP. Put it on the page.
Oh, we're shortening it now. PIOPT.
But at any rate, this has been the Don't Panic Radio Show. Nothing you just heard was true. For Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson. This has been the Don't Panic. I forget how to do this show.
That's what happens when we take a week off.
We'll see you all next week. For Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson. Nothing you just Nothing. Heard. You just Nothing. Heard. It's true. It's true.
Sometimes, Mouse, you think you know people, and then you don't. Then you wonder, have I met them before? But it doesn't matter. You're just information. That's what we keep inside our heads.